This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
They survived on the very final day. I imagine you're delighted, but how were the nerves last Sunday?
The nerves were the worst I've ever known them. I mean, my children looked at me in horror as I was jumping off the sofa, screaming my head off. It's very good news that as president, I feel I can hide away in some of these moments that I'm not visibly seen because it was one of the most stressful moments of my life, as I imagine every Villa fan felt on that day.
Usually every time he finished a song, he'd get on a payphone wherever he was in the country and call me and wake me up. And so, like, he laid the phone down and started playing his guitar, you know? And that's how I heard this song the first time. I always thought this was a real pretty one. It's called My Old Man.
Turn again by Davis. It's John McGinn finding Grealish. Grealish!
Wow! Wow!
Stunning! Scintillating! Surviving!
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, your vaccine to the pandemic of transfer clickbait. Joining me for a bonus episode, which you can bolt on to episode 111, Mr. Phil Shaw returns. Welcome back.
Hello.
And Mr. Chris Bird, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you very much. You good?
All good here. I mean, we only just put out the last show, but Phil was dying to be on the show. We thought we'd go through the transfer rumours and just give them a jolt of reality. Before we get into it, though, we're recording this after Bayern Munich absolutely blitzed Barcelona.
Laughably so.
Which Chris was watching, I wasn't watching it.
Yeah, it was pretty quite sad, actually, to see how the mighty have fallen.
But the Germans do that. They're very good at, in a football context, obliterating and really putting the knife through teams. Like, you know, the Germany-Brazil game in Brazil's back garden, 7-1, and then they just dismantle the likes of, well, German teams per se have dismantled the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs in recent Champions League tournaments as well. They don't do the 3-0s. They almost get into double figures, don't they?
I think they just demoralise you, don't they? I mean, the fact that Barca conceded, I think it was like 3 in the last 4 or 5 minutes was just, they just were mentally
done.
They
keep on going. It's like that Muller just loves crushing people into the dirt, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I was saying to you as we were warming up that this is the DNA that Villa need to instill into their Villa engine.
Yeah, well, you want to be like 5-0 up with about 10 minutes to go, and then you bring on another two strikers.
Yeah, no, exactly. This is the DNA I want in my team, that just ruthlessly destroys teams. Takes apart the old, considered, decorated glory teams. After a couple of years, once we get this DNA instilled into this team, we start beating Liverpool 9-1.
And Man U won't be coming to Villa Park and winning again for 20 years or something.
Ever again in my lifetime, anyway.
Yeah, Van Dijk will be tweeting a picture of his latest sports car in his pocket on the way home.
So anyway, here we are dreaming. Hopefully Villa's, this transfer window will be the first step to such greatness. We'll just, I mean, this is a more of a relaxed show. If you want a proper show, please do listen to episode 111. This is more like something for the weekend. The main transfer talk is, we've kind of discussed Ollie Watkins and Benrahma, the two Brentford boys. Phil loves to dabble in the Twitterverse, and he's picked up the latest little snippet of info that suggests Watkins is on his way.
Yes, looks to be that he's following and being followed by the Villa fitness coach, which, if we remember back to last summer, was how Douglas Luiz sort of news became broke of him at the time when he was stuck over in Brazil waiting on a work permit. So
it's literally just rubber stamping the deal, isn't it? Such Twitter shenanigans.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of the pastime of it. I mean, you troll through rubbish pictures of players getting on the airplanes and things like that until you find someone that's actually found a bit of useful information. So it's like a treasure map.
You are literally one of the Twitterati, aren't you? Villa Twitterati.
I'm a long way from Villa Twitterati. A long way.
Good.
So, yeah, we did discuss the Brentford pair really in terms of our thoughts and, you know, why Villa should be cautious per se. Another main one, which has kind of caught a bit of fire, which is all about the Villa Twitterati. I mean, they're pouring the petrol on the fire at the moment, is Milo Rashica.
Yeah, he's the Werder Bremen attacking midfielder. He can play probably all the way across from either wing or number 10. Because Dean Smith was interested in him in January, and there was a chance that he would have a low release clause if Werder Bremen got relegated, it seems to have surfaced again.
The thing was, though, Werder Bremen did pretty much what Villa did. And I mean, in Germany, the third team from bottom goes into a relegation playoff with the team, obviously, that's trying to get promoted. And I think they drew 2-2 in the second leg of the relegation, and that kind of saved their asses. I mean, they fell from grace because Werder Bremen were kind of all right a season or two ago. So they escaped by the skin of the teeth. So there's, he knows he's got the perfect mindset for Villa, escaping relegation by the skin of the teeth. So he'll fit straight in. I mean, some of the pricing has been wild on this. Somebody quoted like 35 million. Is that true?
Yeah, people have been stalking Werder Bremen forums and using Google Translate to work out the German. And apparently Werder Bremen value him at about 18 until teams like Villa come along and they say, oh, 33, yeah, good deal, yeah.
we're not paying over 30 for him. That's a guarantee. You don't pay that kind of money for a winger when you're Villa.
Not right now.
You're breaking your record on like Wesley because he's a centre forward last season, and you know, the similar before that with Darren Bent. Another one that was kind of intriguing because it's almost harks back to the early 90s when Liverpool were in a bit of a transition. But when Graham Souness was in charge, they actually had decent players, but he seemed happy to ship them out, and luckily shipped out a few of them to us. Ray Houghton, Steve Staunton, Dean Saunders. So there's been talk of, discussion about Origi coming, and you know, he's basically Liverpool's bench striker who comes off and, he scored in the Champions League semi and final, didn't he?
Yeah, he scores big goals for them.
Liverpool need a squad because they're fighting on so many fronts that I would be surprised if they let him go, because they know he can come off the bench and turn up in the big games, which is a mentality that at that level that you really need. You need proven performers. And I'm just thinking in the past, was his name David? I mean, I'm stretching my memory back here. The ginger guy at Liverpool, I think it's David Fairclough.
Their super sub.
Who was known as their super sub, yeah. And when you've got that, somebody who's quite happy, well, he's not happy, obviously, to sit on the bench, but rather than sulking, he'll come on, you know, 8 minutes to go or, you know, whatever, 15, 20. But when he's on, he's, you know, he's a threat and he's deadly. And he does a job for you. He doesn't sulk around wanting to be starting. He just does the job that he's there for. So I don't know. I don't think they'd let him go. I mean, it would also be up to the player, because he's got a chance to pick up a few more pieces of silverware. And just this, oh, well, I'll be starting a game. Is that enough, really? Because I think his life's pretty good as it is.
Well, he gets the challenge for things where he is. And I think he'd probably, if I was him, I'd stay put just for now, because you think there's no way that Firmino Salah and Mane are all going to stay fit all the time. Yeah. So you are going to feature. You might not be the main man. It's quite similar to someone like Abraham at Chelsea. You know, you're not the main man, but you are going to get game time because you're challenging on so many fronts.
He's not the main man, but he's scoring in the biggest games possible. Yeah. So that's quite a good wicket to be on, I think.
Yeah, man. And I think he knows he can grow into the team.
Less effort, all the glory. It's kind of perfect. So I can't see him coming.
And to be honest with you, I even think with someone like him, with what he's done in the game, he could probably go abroad and go and be the main man at a much better team than Villa.
Yeah, well, better team at this point in time, for yeah. sure. Flicking on to, I mean, this is a player I actually like. When I've seen him in the flesh, he's always played well when I've seen him in the flesh. Callum Wilson, there was talk of make weight of Scott Hogan going in the opposite direction. Obviously, Scott Hogan, despite being in limbo at Villa, did, let's say, restore some kind of currency to himself by what he did at the Blues. I mean, his record there was pretty decent. The mixed opinions on Callum Wilson. I mean, what do you guys think? But I mean, obviously, it's not a straight swap. Callum Wilson is the type of player that you wouldn't be surprised if he stayed with Bournemouth and just, you know, played out in the Championship. But also, you wouldn't be surprised if he did bag a Premier League move.
He's one who I not necessarily sit on the fence on, but I can see the pros and the cons. I think he's one of those players where my view would be, if you can get him on the cheap, have him as part of your Arsenal, but you're not bringing him in to be the main man, I don't think.
Well, I mean, Callum Wilson is another of those players that you don't want them playing against you. I mean, I'll go back to what I said about Rodriguez. We hate him, but when you see him playing against you, you just go, yeah, I don't want the ball going anywhere near him because there's a good chance it's going in. Wilson's got that sort of in his makeup. It's just...
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously he's an upgrade on Hogan and he's an upgrade on Samata, I would say, as well. But, you know, he's at that age where you're thinking it's not going to be attractive to Perslow if he's the one dishing out the checks.
Not for big money. If you can get him on the cheap, I think fair enough, go for it.
But we have been in a position where we've put out big cash for strikers that have kind of malfunctioned, to for want of a better word. But if Smith wants him and Wilson's up for it, then to have him on the bench, he's certainly upgrading the bench at least in terms of striker options, because I don't think he's going to be playing 38 games for Villa, but you might get a couple of seasons out of him.
No, I agree. I think he's that kind of player potentially where you could actually look at your bench and go, actually, he can come off and he can make something happen if you need to chase a game.
Yeah. Then there's the Norwich pair, Bandia and Todd Cantwell, which I don't know. Is this Gavin McCann and Tommy Sorensen, where you pick the best players from a relegated team like desperate vultures?
Yeah, I'm unsure with those two. To be honest, I think if we keep what we've got, you're bringing those guys in, and realistically, they're probably not better than what we've got. So they are just potentially quite expensive squad filler.
Yeah,
because I think obviously if as long as Grealish is still here at the start of the season, he's not going to play over Jack, is he? And it's like, well, you probably wouldn't.
Todd
Cantwell, yeah. And it's like, well, you're really looking for where Villa aspire to be, and I think this is going to be the theme with a lot of people who we're rumoured with, for where Villa want to be, you need to be doing better than these guys. Yeah. Now, every now and then a relegated team goes down and it's unfortunate and you get a player that was in that side. A bit like if we'd gone down, there'd have been a few players who could go on to do better things. But, you know, the Norwich lads, kind of, they had a very good season in the Championship, but they were very much a unit. They came into the Premier League and no one really cut it. Like Cantwell's stats, they don't blow you away. They're all right. He's putting some good performances. I think he's technically a very gifted player. Buendia's kind of tidy as well, but they're not what you'd call they're not a banker either, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just filler.
And yet again, I think if they're going to cost you a lot of money, what's the point?
Yeah, you'd rather do a bit of work scouting wise and dig up somebody like a McGinn for that kind of price.
Yeah, just be savvy
rather than dropping double figure millions on people that you've actually seen across a good period of game in the Premier League and actually they've just got relegated in their team. So it's like,
I tend to agree.
Phil, are you into Norwich rejects?
I just think if Jack goes, I think they're both coming in. I just think that's the mentality. They're two to replace one player. I think they're not what we need. We need somebody to put the ball in the net. We don't need somebody to, you know, create these chances anymore. We need a bit of ruthlessness up front, and that should be the priority, not more creators. Because if we go through all the stats that we've been bombarded with since the end of the season, Grealish created more chances probably than anybody in the world.
Do you hear that, Chris? Phil, I think he still thinks Grealish is going to go.
Oh,
you can hear the tremor in his breath.
Well, I'm sure Jamie O'Hara is pleased to hear that someone agrees with him.
Yeah, this is. Everybody talks about Grealish. We said our piece earlier on. I mean, I wrote something where I set out my stall in terms of why it doesn't make sense that he would leave at this point in time. I think we'll find out probably next week because he just got back from his holiday, and that's when you move. But just doesn't seem logical that he would go. But, you know, the Manchester United links, as soon as they start to, or they run out of potential angles to bring out the daily Jack to United story, they start talking about Arsenal. Then they start talking about Spurs. And there's Spurs, people forget, Spurs built a new stadium. Now, look at what happened to Arsenal when they built the Emirates. They took their foot off the gas in terms of, splashing the cash for a good few seasons. And, they took a different approach, didn't they? That's when Wenger started getting stick because that rabid fan base wanted big signings. And, you know, obviously they had run a business there. Now, Spurs have just pumped, $850 million? You know, they have to pay that back. They didn't want to build a stadium that just gets used twice every month. They had all kinds of plans for, you know, they had the NFL contract. It's going to be a major event. You know, there was talk of Anthony Joshua fighting there. And all these revenue streams have just suddenly disappeared. So that when they did their maths, how do they pay back this stadium? Obviously, it's got to pay for itself. So they had all this kind of extra outside of football potential uses for it. They've all gone. So what's Daniel Levy going to suddenly do? Is he going to start saying, oh, well, we tried to get Grealish before, but we don't think he's worth that much. We tried to, you know, lowball them a couple of seasons ago. That didn't work. So what's he going to do? Well, let's forget about the stadium. I'm just going to spend 4 or 5 times the amount of what I would originally have paid for Grealish and get Grealish in. There's no way they're going to go silly money while that stadium's needing to be repaid.
Not when they're taking, was it 160 odd million in government aid to help them pay for it at the moment as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, these people who put out these stupid articles that are only made so people click on them, so, you know, they get whatever ad revenue they're scratching around for. It just proves either the writer is a dumbass and they just don't think about the context of the deal, or they're just insulting their readers and they're doing it on purpose. They're just baiting them in. Grealish to Arsenal as well. I mean, Arsenal are laying off staff. Willian, they got in and they're paying him a silly wage, but, you know, there's no transfer fee there. So they're not putting a big, wedge of cash up front. So you can see how that kind of, it's a bit like the Petacek deal, isn't it? Where they get somebody who's pretty much run his course, really. Because their heart's with Chelsea if it's with any London team.
I mean, I like Willian. I think he's a good player. They'll probably get a good season out of him and then we'll see a bit
then
further down
bored,
the line. Yeah, he'll probably get bored.
So yes, Phil, I think I'm not convinced with the Grealish thing at all. And that's just because I don't think it's logical at this point and in this economic climate and, this kind of social climate as well.
I think the only thing it probably hinges on really is the Sancho deal. I think if the Sancho deal was to fall through, then there'd be maybe a few alarm bells at Villa Park. But I think while Sancho is their priority signing, I think he's the guy they want.
Yeah, I don't think the alarm bells will necessarily be at Villa Park. They'll be more with the supporters, I would say.
Yeah.
As I said previously, if Ferguson was in charge, if he was looking to pick Grealish, I think you'd wait and see what he did next season. Because if I was fit, I wouldn't be convinced to splash massive money on him at this stage.
Not when you've just spent $46 million on Fernandes and he's transformed your team.
Exactly. And, you know, when we watched, when we were watching them, I think was it when they beat, did they beat Bournemouth? It was when they really kick-started and blew some team away.
Yeah, they stuck 5 past Bournemouth, didn't they?
And that whole, you know, that young front three just clicked into gear and you just thought they're playing at such a pace. I can't see Grealish fitting in here because he plays a different way and he would kind of slow it down. But anyway, we will see it. But at the moment, it just the stars aren't aligning for that move, I don't see it.
No, I just think that those are two players that, you know, it would be remiss of Villa not to have that sort of backup in their head if if that player goes, because I just have this feeling in the back of my head that City are going to take him for their bench. That's where I think Grealish, if he's going anywhere, I think if he goes anywhere, it'll be City he goes to.
Just to remind our listeners, because Phil hasn't been on the show for a couple of weeks, he's quite paranoid, this Phil Shaw. Right, anyway, let's move on to Matty Cash at right back for Forest. He was part of that wonderful team that completely bottled it big time and slipped out of the playoffs after being in the playoffs pretty much the whole year. What are your views on him? Because I think the price is a bit silly to be interested in. Was it around 15 million?
Yeah,
West, I'm not bothered.
No, West, I think the rumour is West Ham were quoted that, and seems to be West Ham don't have a lot of money to spend this year, like a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think we've just seen the first stage of speculative pricing, and you may have noticed there hasn't been much transfer activity. I mean, a lot of players are on holiday at the moment, so agents, etc., put these prices out and feed them to the press, and then you see what kind of feedback you get. So I think the first wave is definitely, I think we can draw the line under the first wave now, and I think the prices will start to get a bit more realistic as the season draws in. Jamal Lewis is another name linked around like the 20 million mark.
Yeah, well, Jamal Lewis, I'm a big fan, obviously watching him play for the national team, you know, but he can't defend. He hasn't learned how to defend yet, so I can see why Liverpool wanted him to sort of like learn under Andy Robertson, sort of to learn the defensive side. But he used to be a sprinter, went to, you know, to the Commonwealth Games and then came back to football again. So that's where it is. All his pace and he's attacking in the final third. But I think you saw in the game against Watford, he just got completely bullied for one of Watford's goals against Norwich. So
how old is he nowadays?
He's early 20s.
Yeah, he's about 22, 21, 22, I think.
Do you think Liverpool would potentially loan him out, championship style, to the championship? You've got like a raw talent. I mean, 20 million, there's no way anybody's going to pay that, surely.
Especially when you've got Alexander-Arnold and Robertson as your fullback options. It's like you aren't going to Liverpool to be the number one. He would be going there as backup, and it's just like...
No, but nobody's going to buy him for 20 million, are they?
Nah.
No, and Liverpool quickly moved on him, but I think it was maybe a Greek left back or a Greek fullback to sort of
take
the
place. That was done this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that's how the big boys do it. It's like 20 million. Nah, we'll get one at 11 here with our scouting network, our proper scouting network.
Yeah, but in terms of a Villa context, a right back, if you can get a player, as we said in the last podcast, that can improve your back line, then you get him in. As simple as that.
It's debatable how much better than Gilbert or Anel Mohammadi. I think we're actually not too badly off, because I think Gilbert will improve in his second season, and Anel Mohammadi, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
I think if you can get a very good right back, fair enough, but it's not necessarily a priority. It's not high enough up the list of priorities to be going to spending 20 million on at the moment.
I'm not talking about Jamal Lewis in this, but like if you look at the NFL draft, for example, a team goes into the draft with their needs pretty much prioritized. Yeah. But when it gets to your round and your pick, and you look at who's left available, and if the best player in the draft is actually another position that's not actually on your priority list, sometimes the old GM will go, where are we taking him? Because we didn't expect him to be there at this stage of the draft, but he is the best player and he will improve the team in that position. Even though our needs are X, Y, and Z, this guy's going to upgrade us in this position. So I think in terms of our back four, that's how that will play out. I don't think we'll be hunting necessarily to improve the back four, but if something becomes available and we get a sniff of something, and that's when I think, and probably the only reason we would go in and get something in the, you know, the back four.
I mean, personally, I'd rather we went and spent 20 million on a really good goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, I don't know about 20 million. I don't think they'd do that. But just sticking to the defence, I think if something becomes available that actually improves the back four, that's the only remit for buying a player. So when it comes to like somebody like Jamal Lewis, is he improving right back drastically? Probably not. Not for 20 million anyway.
No, not for the money.
I'm surprised it was him that the big offer went in for, because everybody was talking about Max Aarons over in the other fullback side. He was meant to be the big star.
Yeah. Moving on, the alert or the astute will notice their local newspapers and, you know, even some papers like the Mirror or whatever. Actually, they're all owned by the same people. Funny enough, coincidence. They have a drawer of rumours or stories that they'll just roll out. The next transfer window, they'll roll it out again because they think that this player is connected in some way to the club. You know, maybe he's born in Birmingham or that area. You know, step forward, Daniel Sturridge, who's always linked to Villa in the last few windows, and that story's resurfaced again. And, you know, it's the same answer. No way. Unless he takes one hell of a drastic cutting wages, or they structure a deal where it's, you know, you get paid when you play, and that's about as best as he's ever going to get, I think.
I'm not even going to talk about Daniel Sturridge.
Yeah, exactly. I've just wasted 10, 15 seconds of my life there. Don't waste any of yours, Phil. Jeff Hendrick, Burnley midfielder. He's a free agent, is he not?
He is.
All kinds of bizarre clubs involved, interested, allegedly, from AC Milan to the even bizarrer club Aston Villa. Is he improving you?
I think for a
giving
free,
you something else?
It's a bit of squad depth. I think that's what you do. If you can do a deal and his wages aren't too big, you go, okay, no worries. It's a really low risk type of deal, but you'd hope he's a weapon in some way. You know, if he does a job for you.
In terms of being a weapon, explain to the listeners how you see him as a player.
Well, I would say you bring him on when the going gets tough. He has a bit of our favourite word, the shithouse, about him.
Yeah.
He can get stuck in, and...
Don't we need that?
We do need that, but it's when we bring him on. You know, we have well, depends who we have at the start of the season. We didn't have a lot of it until Douglas Luiz found it from somewhere, but he would improve us. But I don't know where you put him in our team, because he is in your McGinn sort of position.
I think he's just he's your backup for McGinn. He's kind of probably what they hoped someone like a Drinkwater could be. For a free, I don't necessarily think it's a bad squad move, depending on his wages.
Yeah.
He could even be one of those players you bring in and he barely kicks a ball for you, but it's numbers.
You need an alternate for McGinn as well, because we need depth ultimately, but we need depth. And with when I say depth, it needs to be, you know, a depth of quality, not just numbers.
Yeah, it's a thing of like sort of trust, and you know, it's the fact that he's a relatively established international. He's played a lot of first team football. He's sort of 28, which means he's actually not a bad age. Been around the block a little bit in the Premier League. I think it's just a really low risk kind of deal that I you know, if we didn't get him, I wouldn't be gutted. But if we did get him, I'd kind of be like, okay, fair enough. He's going to be in and around the squad. He's not going to be a starter. It'd probably be curtains for Henry Lansbury.
Well, it's curtains for him anyway. I mean,
that's
an option.
His current haircut, isn't it, actually?
I was going to say it's an option of a haircut, and that's about it, really. I was going to say at the start that I'm not bothered about transfer rumours. We sign them and then you take it from there, but that would have meant that we wouldn't have just spoken about all those players, but there you go. I think this upcoming week we will see announcements. We'll no doubt tie in with the away shirt reveal. So I think they'll do a double reveal, I would say. It's that kind of... Sometimes they like to kick off the summer, don't they, with a double, triple reveal.
Especially now when, of course, the club won't have all the PR sort of hype around like a pre-season tour to America or any of that. Yeah. They've lost all that momentum they would have got.
I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, Jermaine Jenas and Alan Hutton, that double reveal.
Or the triple one where they did Draper, Southgate and Savo on the same day.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's going to happen, I'd say this week, ending this week. Now the players are back in pre-season and back from their holidays, etc. The ball should start rolling. And probably Watkins, you would imagine, wouldn't you? To
quite
be one
possibly.
Of those.
I mean, you'd like to think they'll have a resolution on the Grealish deal. I mean, that could be the first of what you'd class as a big sort of signing as such. That'd be a big statement.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, from what Steve Bruce said at the time, you know, he was on a big contract anyway. And what's he getting rewarded for exactly? For being a Premier League player? I don't kind of get that. It would have meant that the PR, I mean, as I said on the last podcast, it's in his interest to be spoken about every day. So then his agent can say, oh yeah, well, you know, Jack will stay, but you know, there's all this interest for him. It's if he, you know, people say, well, it's not about the money for Jack, then what's the conversation? He should be playing for Villa because he's on a, you know, pretty fucking decent wage. He shouldn't be, he doesn't deserve extra money.
Unfortunately, it's the thing of just, if you're going to compete with where you want to compete, and he's relatively on a level with a James Maddison, if James Maddison's getting paid X,
yeah,
Jack Grealish is going to need to be paid X. It's just market forces, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem. It's a strange world. I mean, like Maddison, they should have said to him, well, you didn't get us in the fucking Champions League, so go fuck yourself.
I mean, I'm really surprised at that deal, because I actually thought as soon as Leicester missed out, I thought that would be him gone.
Yeah, but he's not that good. I mean, those two, it's almost like, I mean, they're mates, so it's almost like that, because it was 24/7. You looked on social media, whatever format, and there was some bullshit, who's the best? You know, Grealish or Maddison, some meme or some bloody graphic or something, and you just think, well, both of them have still got a lot to bloody do to kind of start to get into the pantheon of like top Premier League players. I mean, call me cynical, but I don't think they're both there yet. They're not, you know, they're not doing it day in, day out.
No, you bring up Bruno Fernandes again. Did he outscore both of them in what, since January just?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's like Fernandes' stats this year. I'm sure I heard after the last United game, he was in about 46 games, he was involved in 47 goals. In two teams. Outrageous stats.
Well, that's when you should be masturbating over a player on social media, when they're pulling out that kind of stuff. And you actually see it with your own eyes. You don't need all this bullshit stats of, you know, let's say second tier stats, like, oh, most key passes, most chances created. Well, that sounds great, but look at the league table and you see Villa, where Villa are, and you're like, well, that hasn't actually contributed to anything in reality, has it? You look at, you watch 15 minutes of Fernandes and you go, shit, he's good.
Yes, what about the new stat that appeared this week, the pre-assist, the one for the Birmingham fans are going nuts because Jude Bellingham got a pre-assist. He did get a proper assist the next game, or the same game, but nah, pre-assist, I'm out, done, I'm done at that.
Yeah, it's like there's people forget about that their own eyes can actually tell you about a player. That seems to be long gone, because a lot of people don't actually watch these players most of the time. It's just parroting stats that's just there almost like for PR purposes. Anyways, we will see. I mean, you know, on the Grealish thing, like if you went to the League Cup final and with a let's say a German football fan, Italian football fan, they hadn't seen any, you know, English football, didn't know anything, and you said to them, I support Villa, watch our 80 million guy. And then he said, which one's him? And you just said, well, just sit back and watch and you tell me at half time. He'd just look at you, got no fucking idea who it was.
He'd go, is that little left-footed kid for the opposition?
But you know a player when he's, you know, if Fernandes was playing that game, you'd know, oh, shit, he's fucking good. It's like what your eyes kind of tell you. And I don't think Grealish is influencing, you know, in the restart period, he didn't do it. That's what I was saying. If I was Alex Ferguson, I'd want to see another season or two out of him. And, you know, it'd also give him a chance to be the boss man and really impress.
And it gives you a chance to kind of build a team around the way he wants to play. And if he doesn't want to play out wide, he wants to be in the middle. You are going to have to build your team to suit that.
If he's good enough, yeah. And, you know, but also, you know, from a United point of view, for example, if you're Alex Ferguson, you want to see him doing it at the top level. So you know that your investment's, you know, going to reap rewards. It shouldn't be a punt and go, oh, can Grealish handle this? You know, blah, blah. Can he really influence games like Fernandes? And, you know, is it worth paying twice the amount that we paid for this guy who's actually really fucking good and has proven it? And he proved it before at international and in European competition. These are the things that people kind of forget. It's like madness takes over.
Well, if you remember, like when Ferguson bought, it was Rio Ferdinand, wasn't it? And he'd had a few years in the West Ham first team, maybe like 100 appearances or so. Then he went to Leeds and had two brilliant seasons. So Ferguson knew he was getting the real deal. He was the finished article.
And his timing was always, it's like Dwight York.
He got him at his absolute peak, didn't he?
Could have picked him off a little bit earlier, you know, any kind of time. But he teams like that, it's not okay. They, you know, they breed their own players, of course. But when they're buying, let's say, the celebrated players of this, you know, teams in the second or third tier of the Premier League, they want to see them do it in the Premier League, but, you know, do it in a winning capacity, not just, you know, trying to survive relegation or whatever. They want to see them influence the whole team, so they know they're getting somebody gilt edge. And I think it's in Grealish's interest to stay and he, you know, there's this bullshit, oh, he needs to go somewhere else for England. No, he fucking doesn't. David Platt, I keep naming that example, but, you know, banging in 20 plus goals in all competitions in two consecutive seasons from midfield. And that's, you know, there's a player that's, you know, visually influencing a game. And, you know, statistically as well, because he's scoring all the fucking goals. But in a big, big way. And he did, as soon as he got in the England team, exactly the same thing. So we need Grealish in the Villa team to actually put on the show, get into the England squad, do what Darius Fussell did and score straight away and, you know, really hit the ground running. He played better for England than he did for Villa, Darius Fussell. That was kind of a weird anomaly.
Deadly for England, wasn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, right. Anyway, that Grealish, blah, blah, blah. We're always talking about Grealish. Everybody talks about Grealish. Just stay and play some football so we don't actually have to talk about bullshit and we can talk about what's happening on the pitch and hopefully inspiring Villa back to some form of greatness and some self-respect rather than hyping any player just for, you know, and the actual team's doing fuck all. Right, we're just going to just finish off the show, just go through a few of the Mad Few, the Facebook group dedicated to the show, some of their questions. I actually forgot about them. I asked for questions over a week ago. So these ones still stand firm. So here we go. Right, no particular order of these. So there's no kind of narrative to these. It's just as they come. Richard Palmer, do you think the pressure of having to get results after lockdown would galvanise the squad to perform better next term?
Yes.
Yes, the defence anyway.
Yeah, and a bit of just the intensity.
Yeah, they realise that it feels better to win and not get beat and get beat cheaply, I think.
And they've got that kind of plan B mentality a little bit now, which is good.
And the fact that they've kind of been through something helps galvanize you 100%. Thomas William Linton says, what do you think the bigger achievement is? The 10-game winning run and playoff win last season, or the 4-game unbeaten run against all odds and staying up on the final day of this season? Well, I'm going 100% for the 10-game winning run because we really felt the season was over at that point. And obviously from that was born what we've gone through, and it put us ahead of a year ahead of schedule, as Persilo likes to say. I think with the relegation battle, my heart was saying we're not going down. And that kind of carried on until the end, didn't it? It wasn't like we didn't feel like we were 100% down, because, you know, you can't give up on your team. But we'd given up on the team like the season before. Well, I certainly had.
Yeah, we'd definitely written the season. I agree with you. I think we'd, you know, after that, it was West Brom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think obviously
it was a shocking performance. It was awful. Listless performance.
Awful. And even the Stoke game, really, where we went there and drew. And while we played well, nobody expected anything. Even when we beat Derby 4-0, everyone was like, oh, yeah, great. 2-0, 2-8. Nice one.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we beat Blues and everyone was like, oh, hang on a minute. We've had two weekends here where the results have started to go our way and we've won. And we're playing well.
Yeah.
I mean, not, you know, to come from 7 points adrift at one point to get out of trouble was great. But actually, I always thought we could. And I'd said, you know, somewhat infamously, firmly believe. But I always said, if we could take it to the last day still in it, we'd be all right. And as it was proved, happened.
Yeah. Phil, quickly.
I'm going against you. I'm going with the 4-game unbeaten run because it was a higher quality opposition with a worst team we had. Our team in the championship was head and shoulders above 90% of other teams, so we should have been...
fair argument. That's a fair argument.
You should have been going on runs like that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, Rich Clark says, what does the relaxation of FFP actually mean for Villa and teams generally? As I understand it, reading between the lines, it's designed to allow owners to subsidise for loss of income due to COVID, not spend as much as they fancy. That's exactly what it is. And with all the cuts in revenue streams, I mean, primarily due to fans not going, and let's say a drop of sponsorship and size of sponsorship because you've got no footfall around your ground either, you won't find many clubs spending stupidly. There's going to be, count how many transfers you've seen so far, and the window's been open a few weeks. It's that's what FFP is completely, you know, the relaxation of it is completely about. Anything to add?
No, not really, to be honest, mate.
No, I'm sure Perslow will find a way to squeeze the last penny out of it, so I'm not worried about it.
That's why I was a bit surprised when Chris said on the last podcast he wouldn't be surprised if Villa spent over 100 million.
I can see them doing it this window, but then I think what this the FFP does is it means you can spread it out over the next, potentially, if you were, you know, stay up again, you can spread it out over the four windows, can't you? That just means, you know, you can offset the numbers slightly over next season as well, which I think you might see a few teams do that. It looks like that's what Chelsea going to do in the big teams. They'll go in big and then they won't have a massive January window, for example.
Jordan Rees says, what do you think is a realistic target finish for us this season? Also, thoughts on who will be our standout player next season from the current squad? I mean, realistic, it could be anything. It depends what we get in. And
yeah, it could be anything.
What our attitude is when we start. Because if we carry on how we finished and have that kind of resolve that we show and handle the lockdown behind closed door scenario as well, then get a bit of momentum and it can be a totally different team. And, you know, the first season back can all always be like a relegation transitional period, and then you can jump on in the next season in dramatic style. So I think, you know, there's a wide spectrum of where we can finish in terms of standout player of the current squad. I think Luiz potentially will carry on, and we'll see him over a full season as he, and he's still very young, as he develops. So I think that's the scenario there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, I'd like to think we can be near the top of the bottom half. I think if you were to break the top 10, I think you'd consider that a very good progress.
Yeah, I wouldn't put a tail on a donkey at this stage. I think there's a wide spectrum from European places even to,
and there's so many teams that are going to be transition, and to be honest, we've said it in the last podcast, you look at that bottom half of the table, I mean, it's garbage.
Yeah, it always has included been. That's the thing. Phil, any pessimism to share?
No, I'm hoping for in and around 10th at least.
Ooh.
Wow.
Well, in and around 10th can be anything from 10th to 14th. So.
which would ultimately be progress, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's the next
progress
step
and consolidation are probably the two words for me.
Gary Horgan says, do we just cut our losses on Samatta and sell? I just don't see him cutting it next season in the Prem and would rather cut our losses now and sign two solid strikers. One with Premier League experience, hopefully. One with potential who can drift out wide. It will be 2021 before Wes is Premier League fit, I reckon. Davis, possible loan in January once Wes is back up to speed. I think they're not going to throw Samatta under a bus at this stage because that'd be a dramatic failure. I mean, they'd be pretty cutthroat not to give him a chance. If they felt in the first place that he could do a job, then it would be a dramatic turnaround, I think, just to give up on, what was it, 10 million or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we saw his diving header in the cup final, we thought, oh, okay, this is a guy who can give him service, he'll score goals. And the reality is he hasn't had much service. He's not been particularly wasteful in front of goal, I wouldn't have said.
No.
He just hasn't been getting any service. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now. You know, he's another player who's had to settle in like so many. You know, he might find himself down the pecking order a place, but I think that might apply to a few people, especially in the forward positions. So now I'd stay put. It would be rubbish business to try and get rid of him now.
Yeah. And Gary, we would probably get two strikers in anyway with him around because, as you said, Wes is not looking to be back anytime soon. And one thing we don't have is a depth of strikers to call upon. Eleanor Peters says, where can we get a 20 goals a season striker from and how much? If the club knew that, they'd have had him in already.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what everybody wants. How many did the top scorer in the league this year was 23, wasn't it? So it's not as easy as it once was. It's not like every team have a 20 goals a season striker anymore.
And when we were in the Championship, we made a habit of just buying everybody's striker in the Championship that had scored over 20 goals a season, and that just didn't work out for us. I mean, that's exactly why they bought Codger, because he scored 19 for Bristol City. They didn't seem to put two and two together and realise that him scoring that 19 goals still didn't really lift Bristol City very far above the relegation zone. And of course, when he did it for Villa, we were a middling table team because you sacrificed a lot in terms of the team when Codger was there.
Yeah.
And then Ross McCormack, they principally bought him because they thought, well, we're just buying 20 goals a season there, guaranteed.
Yeah, we're buying promotion.
And what they didn't realise there, that you actually had to play a way to accommodate Ross McCormack. And actually,
Keeping him away from the pub.
Think about, seriously, actually how to play him.
Yeah, yeah, make it
with
work.
Him. You can't just you're playing up top. Right, there we go, 20 goals a season, guaranteed, nice one. Just doesn't work like that. So it was a bit naive in that respect. And obviously he had some issues off the pitch as well. So how much, I don't know, because you look at Benteke, that was probably one of our best pieces of business for a very, very, very long time. And, what was he, 6 million or something?
Yeah, it's about 6, 7 million, I think.
So there's no...
There's no blueprint.
Yeah, there's no magic figure, really, that you have to spend over X amount to get such a goal return. Because look at Aston Villa's two record transfers, both strikers, both minimal goal returned. I mean, Bent scored some important ones to keep us up, but in terms of tally, not that much.
I mean, how many times did I say on the pod through the season that, you look at some of the forward talent that was brought into the league last year? I'm thinking Haller at West Ham, Richarlison, Joelinton, Wesley, big money signings, all of them flopped.
Yeah. Right, let's burn through these. Jack Shipton says, perhaps a bit sadistic, but I would be interested in hearing the thoughts of gazing into the crystal ball on what relegation would have entailed. Purslow gone, backroom in disarray, or do we think the owners would ensure a steady hand on the tiller? I'm not even bothered going to entertain that question because it would just have been a dark cloud, put it that way. And I think you may have seen Smith go. You would have seen a lot of egg on the face, shall we say.
Yeah, it would have been humbling to say the least.
Yeah, and then suddenly going from 1 year ahead of schedule, you would have been 2 years behind schedule because you would have hoped to have got promoted this season. So this season about to start, we would have been in the Premier League, and now we would be in a position where we'd be one division back, and you'd have to play out another season to potentially get back in the Premier League. But there was no guarantees it would bounce straight back. You'd have seen players leave. I mean, it would have been, as a supporter, it would have been pretty distressing, I think, to know that, the whole Grealish thing was a complete waste of time, to see, Mings fuck off as well. McGinn, what a waste of time that was, after getting a player for 2.5 million, that the first step is he helps get you promoted, but then you get relegated anyway. And, people would have been revisionist. I mean, Grealish would have got a bit of a backlash, I think. McGinn would have got a bit of a backlash. Ming certainly, I think because we stayed up and he was reasonable in the restart, people got back on side because he was getting a bit of flack for his mistake every game kind of narrative. So yeah, it's one of those things that you don't want to go there. We just kept, we are. Why even ask that?
Akin Fenwa would have been playing against you at Villa Park. That's all you need to say.
Phil Shaw asking questions to himself here. Considering I am the opposite of Bud and always wrong in my predictions, etc., what's the worst judgment you could have regarding Villa this season, or the season just gone, shall we say?
Well, I'll just say that you can listen back. I thought Drinkwater might be a nice bog standard midfielder that would have done a job.
I think I may have been a bit more, but then again, most people are bullish at the start of the season. And I was thinking we would finish a few more places higher than we did. But that January, that game against Burnley, where in the early stages of that game, I mean, that goal, the Grealish goal and the build-up to it, you thought, right, here we go, happy days. It's all starting to click into place here. And then that double whammy of injuries kind of put the kibosh on that early optimism. Because I think Wesley looked like he was getting somewhere. And that would have been an integral part of how we could improve. He'd have probably got into double figures.
Yeah.
And I think we would have probably been there or thereabouts where I expected us to finish. So, you know, that was my only worst judgment was we finished lower, but that was only because we got key injuries.
Yeah, my sort of bigger one was I thought once Mings got his England call-up, I thought he'd actually grow in confidence, and actually he started and admitted himself quite recently on the BBC that he started to play within himself a little bit more, and that's when the mistakes started becoming a bit more regular.
Yeah, because you got that, you're under the
microscope and stuff.
Microscope and magnifying glass, aren't you, and the pressure's
yeah,
more intense. Right, Paul Lee says, how do you feel whenever fans go in on Grealish for diving and not tracking back? Basically, being a show pony footballer, it reminds me of how Ashley Young was slagged off by fans of other clubs when he was doing the business for us. I don't care, really. I think. If he's putting their noses out of joint, that means he's doing something right, really.
I mean, the only thing in terms of Jack, not necessarily diving, but I don't want to see Jack getting leathered taking the ball off his own centre-backs. If he's getting fouled, I want to see it in the final third, or ideally in the penalty area, which we didn't. I don't think he got a penalty all season, did he, this year?
No, and that is, I mean, that's another bugbear, if you want me to go into it.
That was a big, that's always a big sign, isn't it? When you look at how many penalties, say, someone like United had this year,
yeah,
and even Villa the previous season, you know, the amount of goals that Tammy scored, they were all bloody penalties. Because we were putting men in the penalty area, and most of the time it was Jack getting fouled.
When you've got when your manager comes out and says, I've been telling Jack to get in the box more and make runs, and this goes back to the Championship, when he scored that goal against the Blues, the header on the back stick, and you think, hallelujah, finally. But then you also think, why does the manager have to tell him to get into those positions and make those runs? Because you always see him as an attacking midfielder. But then I remember hearing an interview, and when they asked him what his best position was, he said, is it like a number eight? So he fancies himself as that central midfielder, I suppose, pulling the strings, maybe a bit Gordon Cowans-esque. But I think, as we've seen, it's almost like he's in denial. Once he gets in the box, you know, he's causing mayhem. And as you said, if he's getting hacked, why aren't we winning all these penalties? Because he's not getting hacked in the box.
Yeah, useful fouls. Especially when you saw the amount of times where we'd get good set pieces in the final third, especially after restart, and the amount of times Hourihane delivered a good ball and we'd score from it. You think that's where you want to see your players. In terms of Jack diving, it's whatever, really.
I mean, this is a good thing. Grealish took a good step this season in terms of his end product and, you know, in scoring.
Yeah.
But I think there's another level that he can get at in terms of, you know, more goals and more
assists.
And
that's why we're critical of him, because yeah, we can see there is definitely another level.
Yeah, I'm not criticising the player per se. I'm criticising the hype version of him, and that's not him doing that. That's like the rest of the bloody Twitterverse and, you know, the world. And the danger is if the player starts to believe in that his own hype and doesn't filter that out and actually, you know, regard himself as a player and how he does improve, because there's clear ways he improves, and some of it is natural. And, you know, let's not forget he's lost 3 years in the Premier League because of, you know, Villa being in the Championship.
Yeah,
but in another respect, that's kind of an advantage, because I think he matured and stepped up more. I mean, I don't think he'd have been captain of Villa if we were just still in the Premier League, because we would have been buying the caliber of player to be a captain, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, swings and roundabouts in terms of that 3 years of championship experience. But I think that's why I want him to stay for the next season, because I think that's where we start to see what he really brings to the table as a player. And that's why we need to get players around him as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, any criticism of Grealish. It's, you know, it's intended to be constructive. You want to see him scoring 20 goals and getting 10 assists.
Exactly.
Yeah, you want to see him being like the players he aspires to be. I mean, he loves De Bruyne. You look at De Bruyne's end product. You look at people like Eden Hazard when he was at Chelsea. That's who he aspires to be like. And it's like, brilliant. Go and be like them.
Victoria Jane says, Vicky says, if 2020 was a player, who would it be? When I first read the question, I thought you meant 2020 Mad Dog, so the drink, the fortified wine. So I was starting to think, but I think the answer for me is quite easy. It would be Trezeguet.
Yeah, I'd agree.
In a nutshell, in a Villa context, anyway. Yeah.
I would say Louise, actually.
Yeah, similar to trajectory.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we don't have to explain why. You can work that one out yourselves. Scott Brickle says, I'm interested to hear if any of the regular suspects on the pod would bring in any players from the relegated sides. If so, who and why? Well, we've kind of gone through the ones that have been attached. The first thing I think about when somebody says, right, who got relegated, who's their best players? I think of, first word that comes to mind is vultures. And the second two names that come to mind, I've already mentioned, is McCann and Sorensen. Because yeah, we did that double whammy, vulture whammy on Sunderland when they got relegated way back then. So I think it's one of those where if you can avoid it, you do, unless there's a real banker there. It's, you know what I mean? It's like damaged goods.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you've got players like, is it Pereira and Doucouré at Watford who aren't bad players, isn't they good? You know, there's that, obviously, the Sarr isn't there at Watford who's quite highly rated, but I think the price tag on him is very high and I wouldn't go near him for that kind of money. I was always a fan of Deulofeu, but I think he's too inconsistent.
I think he's a luxury player, yeah.
Yeah, and we've got a few of them already. I think he's a, if you, he's the kind of player, if he was available on a free, I'd be like, fair enough, put him in the squad, but I don't think we'd go near them. The Bournemouth keeper's pretty good goalkeeper, but debatable.
He got plenty of practice. That's why he's a good keeper.
Yeah. he improved last season. But yeah, I think if you're buying a keeper, you need a new number one, as discussed previously. Mike Pearson asks many a question. Quickly, North Stand, is the time now? With lower attendance next season being mandatory, would you start the renovations now? You're not really firmly settled in the Premier League yet, I think, the way we scraped through. Also, in terms of funding, you're looking now at a picture where your revenue streams have been compromised. So from a business point of view, it doesn't make any sense. Obviously makes sense from the fact there's no fans there. So what a great time to start the renovation. You can carry on building while the game's on in front of you as well. So you literally lose no time. But from my conversations with Purslow, and this question keeps getting brought up, but this is a no non-starter for a good few seasons.
No.
Mike Pearson, again, he asks, is the Leeds game next season our biggest rivalry game, even above Wolves and the Baggies fixtures?
No.
It's United.
Yeah, for me, it's Man United or Liverpool. Leeds is just a little bit of extra colour. It's
a bit of niggle. The only way that becomes a really big game is if you're both down there come the end of the season, it becomes a six-pointer, but it's not. They despise us. I don't give a shit. It's just like, I want to beat Leeds, but I want to beat everyone else as well.
But I don't think they really despise us. That is just the Leeds Twitterati.
Yeah, it's just little gobshites, isn't it?
Every club's got a Twitterati. I mean, after they beat us in that league game at Villa Park, you know, I was on the train talking to some of their fans, and, you know, it's that kind of big club mutual respect type thing. So both sets of fans would want each other in the Premier League, you know, if the other one was in the Premier League. And, you know, there is that niggle from what happened in the Championship. But the way that was going to be settled, and we were waiting for them at Wembley, but they didn't turn up. That was going to be the playoff final.
Yeah, they fucked it, didn't they?
That would have been a class. That would have been a battle. And I was kind of disappointed. You know, people was, you know, saying to me, my old man said, saying, yeah, but Derby's the easier game, you know. And I said, yeah, but, you know, the bigger prize, beating Leeds at Wembley's in this situation where they're a bit riled up about
it's
that
perfect.
Goal. This is why I'm going to Wembley. I want the biggest fucking occasion I can get. I want the most needle, and I want the stakes to be higher, and I want it to be harder, because I was quite comfortable would beat Derby.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Leeds, I'm actually quite happy they are back in the Premier League. I think the league has missed a bit of a pantomime villain, and I think the niggle that they'll bring to the Manchester teams and teams like Liverpool especially, and the fact that Sheffield United are in the league, I think it's a good thing for Yorkshire. And
yeah, no, completely. I mean, they hate United, so that's always welcome.
Yeah.
But no, it's a step up, and you know, even the Baggies, it's better to have the Baggies than Bournemouth. I would say, and Leeds
first time in a hell of a long time, isn't it? It's got to be at least a decade since the West Midlands has had three Premier League sides in the league again.
And when I was a wee lad, I think these were the three teams that were in it. I don't know. I think the Blues were there as well. There was four. So, but you need it. You need, if Villa are in the top league, you need your local fucking rivals to be there as well, because that's one part of this, you know, game of football that we like.
Yep.
Another question from MP. Is Lang really an upgrade to Suso based on off past gigs?
Jury's out.
We spoke about this and why we're not getting too excited because it's a completely different canvas for Lang. So obviously the powers that be at Villa have faith in him that he can transition and he can be part of a brave new world and approach. So we'll see what happens. So it's different, I think, is what I would put out there. But yeah, it's not like, oh, this is so much better. But, you know, I was tongue-in-cheekly saying in the last podcast, every time a football director stroke sporting director comes in, you know, the narrative from media and fans and club is, oh, finally, we have direction. We've never had this before. This is a new, you know, whole new world, a new wave. No, it's not. It's just somebody tweaking what's happening. And it's somebody with a different black book of contacts, really, and that's about it. But he has quite a methodical approach, so we'll see if it works in practice in this context. And another question from MP, do you think Smith should have been given the manager's job and oversee all playing staff decisions? No, because this is the way he does. He's never had that, really. I think maybe Walsall was the last time.
It's a very dated way of working that is now. Look what happened when we did it under O'Neill.
Yeah.
Pissed a load of money up the wall. It's not the modern way.
We are talking about delegation here and the idea of scouting team is, you know, we're long gone from even, you know, Sam Allardyce had a sports science department scouting recruitment and, you know, he was looking at ways to maximize and, you know, shed the load as well. And it's a lazy thing. Like when there's a player that's not so good, it's, oh, we talked about it in 111. I think Dan was saying this, the football director becomes the scapegoat. Oh, he, you know, these are his players. You know, it's same with the Sherwood. Oh, this is what, you know, these are what Sherwood bought. You know, these are what the, you know, Elmstead bought. Dean Smith signs off on these players. They fucking scout these players. He gives them the type of player he wants. They give him a list. He'll say yes, yes, no, yes, no. Then he'll go with them. You know, he went with Suso. They were in Egypt watching Trezeguet in the African Nations. He's not like knock on the door. Smith's in his office speaking to his, you know, wife or something. And Suso goes, oh, I've got you a gift. You know, here's Trezeguet. Egyptian winger. Pretty good. Was doing all right in Turkey. Oh, thanks. You say nice one, son. We'll see.
Thanks for those social media numbers as well. That's just what we need.
Yeah. Also, he's going to add a few thousand on social media. Oh, that's great. I'll have a look at him on the training pitch and tomorrow. That's not how it works. As I said, he gives what he wants. They source it. They give him options. And then he goes off and watches them. He's very much intrinsically involved. If he said, that Trezeguet looks like a pile of shit, then they don't buy him. They're not force feeding him players. And this is a lazy thing that, you know, fans talk about on social media, the apportionate blame. And if they've got a favourite, you know, if they've got a favourite manager, they'll try to dissolve him of the blame of buying this player and saying, well, he should be given the autonomous, you know, job of choosing the players. But he's very much intrinsic in the process. Do you think it's a load of bull, this?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's collective responsibility. I mean, if there's a bad signing, it reflects badly on the three of them that were making the signing choices last year, not on one of them.
Yeah.
Because you seen Suso's interview when he went out, it was like, well, Drinkwater was nothing to do with me. That was Perslow and Smith. Yeah, of course you're going to say that.
Yeah, he's probably right though.
I can't see Suso having heard of Drinkwater.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. It was like, yeah, well, yeah, well, if you think he's all right, yeah, whatever, I don't know. Dean Gregory says, how likely are we to keep hold of Louise? What exactly is the buyout clause in his contract and how does it work? Is it over 2 years and 1 year obviously lapsed? Yeah.
I think it broke today. It was 25 million and City get a 1 million bonus because we stayed in the league.
Yeah, exactly. You beat me to it.
Yeah, Villa will get another year out of him. And then
I think they'll definitely get another year.
Then it just depends on where he's at in his development.
Yeah, and if he continues his development, what we saw in the restart period, then I think City may be tempted. We shall see.
You think if he had a season next year like how he ended the post-lockdown period, if you're getting 38 games of that and you can buy a player of that quality for 25 million, bearing in mind the crazy numbers that have been thrown around in the Premier League, that's an absolute snip.
Yeah, so we could see Alex Ferguson returning to football management with Manchester United and him buying Grealish next season.
Yeah.
And then Louise going to Manchester City. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Sharon Patel says, who wants to go clubbing with Reina? Pepe Reina.
I'm down with a trip to Ibiza.
If you're judging that question on that video, I think it's funny as a I'm in the change room or I'm watching this on social media. But I think to go out on a whole night with him, I think it gets annoying after a couple of hours. I
don't know.
Is that just me or I'd like to, I'd prefer probably go to dinner with him or something because I think, he's quite a bright chap.
Yeah, I know a good Spanish place. Why don't you get some good tapas? And as I said, you go to Ibiza for the night.
But I think if we're singing La Bamba all night, it's like some of the players were there going, yeah, all right, Dad.
Yeah, it was a bit like that in the end. It was like, shut up, mate.
But still, it was it was a great success story for him.
I like him.
Because it turns it into, that was a worthwhile little adventure on my career. It's a rememberable thing. And, he's obviously done some big things.
A brief little dalliance in Birmingham.
Yeah, which you'll remember, amongst all the shit that he won.
Yep.
Phil Hood says, do you think Trezeguet now deserves more respect? I think you should have just ended the question there, but I'll continue. And could be a prospect next year. Easy to be the butt of jokes, but arguably that his goals kept us up. And for every category of errors, he scored a well-taken goal against Arsenal, scored more than Al Ghazi by the end of the season, I think. Trezeguet, he's developing something which is useful, I think, to keep him as part of, let's say, a squad. And that's a bit of a character. And having that characteristic of being able to pop up when we are on our knees in our time of need. I mean, the first clue was in that semi-final second leg at Villa Park against Leicester, where, I was thinking, can we beat Leicester on penalties? Are they going to fuck us in extra time? And then out of nowhere, he just swooped in. And he's got this habit of just swooping in. He just arrives, doesn't he? When he gets a chance where you see the ball go to him and you think, oh, come on. Or he's got a shot and he's got he's 20 yards out and you think, pull the trigger, you know he's not going to do it. But when you don't see him, when he comes in on the blind side and just swoops in like a saviour, that's what he brings to the party.
He's all instinct, isn't he, I think?
If he's beating his man and he's set himself up for the shot, you just know it's not going to do anything. It's going to be tamely struck. It's almost like a pass back or something.
If you see his Instagram, he wants to stay because he hasn't taken that Villa training top off in about 2 weeks.
No, he hasn't. He loves it.
I like him as a character and I want him in the squad because you say his goals arguably kept us up. They did.
They did, yeah.
I mean, if Grealish had scored those that amount of goals, then, another level of hype as, the Messiah that kept us up. But we all know that it was the hitman Trezeguet that did it.
He puts himself into positions to score goals, and you can't argue with that. Are there bits of his game he has to improve on? Well, yeah, but I think he'll know that, and I think he'll feel like quite a few of them that he's settling into the area, settled into the club, and I'd imagine his English is improving,
and his confidence.
His confidence is getting better, yeah,
and his confidence from the fact that he's actually contributed, big time, will only make him more comfortable in next season.
I think it's a shame for him actually that his two goals against Palace, the huge goal against Arsenal, weren't with a crowd in the ground, because I think the lift that would have come from the crowd would have made him feel like the main man.
And also, it would have given the crowd more of a, let's say, a more of a, to use Phil's word, more respect instantly, because you'd have actually been part of your experience then.
Yeah, well, that Arsenal goal and the result would have been one of the iconic moments of the season.
The whole Holt would have been calling his name, celebrating his name. So it'd have been a complete, this is one of the drawbacks of the kind of football that we're watching at the moment in terms of the crowd.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's kick on last couple of ones. Another one from Phil. If we start the season poorly and are near the relegation by October, November, do you think the board will stick with Smith this time or will that be it for him? We're never going to see another relegation zone in your lifetime, Phil, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Just make it clear, this isn't me. When you say Phil, it's not me this time.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not referring to this Phil. I'm talking to the Mr. Hood. But I think the Shakespeare thing has a that was to kind of give the owners a bit of confidence that we had, we were going to improve the, let's say, the management team, because there is an argument that if, let's say, an established Premier League boss came along, and you know, we spoke about this in the context of players, there's no time for sentiment anymore. So you could do what Southampton did to Nigel Watkins, or what Spurs did to Tim Sherwood. And even though they've like done good jobs, and in Watkins, very good job, they still decided that they would upgrade. So I think Shakespeare coming in, it's almost like getting, it's like upgrading your management team. I mean, it's, and you know, as default, your head guy is better now and stronger because he's got a wiser, more experienced at this level anyway, manager by his side.
Yeah, I mean, from what we've seen of the owner's statement, their general stance and strategy would appear to be, well, we're not thinking about being in trouble. The expectation is to move on and up. And the strategy, you know, towards that is, well, what do we have to do to not be in that position again?
And Purslow, you know, is a big Smith backer. So what they, in Shakespeare, they're actually giving him a tool to help him, to make him better.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the club, almost like how, you know, an HR department would, if they had a, you know, like a young owner, for example, would want to bring in an older, experienced CEO to help them improve. And I think that's what Shakespeare will do with Smith and O'Kelly, and probably with John Terry as well, if he's still there. And the framework within the club, they realise they dodged a massive bullet, you know, and then post West Ham, as soon as the whistle went, they'll have known full well that, right, we've really got away with one there. Now we need to make sure that that doesn't happen again. In the same way that when they win the playoff final, the mindset would have been, right, we need to make sure that we're not in this position again either.
Yeah, what I will say, though, there is an interesting dynamic now that what normally happens across a fan base is if the manager, let's say, is going through a sticky spell, it's always social media that reacts first, and you know, you start getting your people who want them out. But when you're going to games, there's a lot more patience.
Yes. Yep.
And so there's like there's a disparity between what you're seeing on social media, you know, where these pricks are just, you know, getting swept up by whoever is baiting them, whether it's the local press or whatever. And it's a lot more knee-jerky, while the more, let's say, sober heads, although, you know, I use that term ironically almost, are the people who are, the sober heads are the ones that have had 10 pints and they're at the game. But they normally give the manager a longer time. But it's when they turn that you know there's a problem, and you're not going to get that. As Phil said, if Smith is struggling, you know, let's say November, and it continues for, you know, we're in the relegation zone, let's say, or, you know, around it for a spell of 2 months, then it's going to get fever pitch, and you're not going to get that kind of rational litmus test. Personally, he's not going to be able to sit at Villa Park and hear what the home crowd really think of the situation, because with Dean Smith and, you know, the Villa fan DNA, you will have a home crowd that kind of gets behind him a bit more, and that will, you know, give him more time, and they'll have a bit more empathy with him, and that will go, because if there's no crowd there, you will just be the keyboard warriors. So that, I mean, that's something to look out for. Hopefully we don't get into that situation, but it's certainly it's a different context in terms of a manager kind of keeping his job. Last question. Dale Allen asks, what does Smith need to do to drop the label of being a championship level manager? I think it's really unfair. Fans of the club give him that label as a stick to beat him with. Well, not get relegated to the championship. That would be a start. And win more games, really.
Simple.
And stop shopping in the championship.
Yeah, that'd help.
Stay away from those Brentford players, and that's the first baby steps to being a Premier League manager.
Learn. That's the big thing. Learn.
Evolve and learn. Right, anyway, let's those questions answered. This is just a bit of a bonus podcast. Please do, if you want more podcasts, and more importantly, to be a member of our 24/7 Match Club, do sign up to be a My Old Man Said patron. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron link. You can now pay in the currency of where you live, as long as you live in the UK, somewhere in Europe and America, US dollars. So there's no more bank charges, conversion fees or whatever. I just have to deal with them. Anything to add, gentlemen, before we disappear?
No, just enjoy this sort of close season, because we weren't expecting it a few weeks ago.
Why not?
Well, I wasn't. You can call me pessimistic again. I was fearing the worst.
In what way?
Relegation.
Yeah, but it said we closed season.
No, we weren't expecting a nice close season where we're shopping in, I don't know, we're shopping in John Lewis instead of shopping in Morrison's.
Well, we're not shopping John Lewis in Birmingham, are we?
Yeah, that got closed down. Yeah. But still, I appreciate the analogy, though.
Yeah.
Right. Please do subscribe if you listen on Apple, Spotify, or whatever podcast app that you use. There'll be a few shows popping up here and there. So it's best to subscribe so then you get the alerts and notifications when they do materialize and be the first to listen to it. Right. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.